Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome.
Good morning, everyone. First, I want to give thanks to Rosemary and Sally, and not just for reading this morning. Rosemary is wonderful and so committed to us, and Sally is a treasure and indispensable to us. We are lucky to have them both, and I value their friendships. As important is my thanks to Kathy and to George for their roles and their support and their patience. Another time I hope to speak about the Reverend Hosea Ballou, one of American Universalism's amazing forefathers and a gifted theologian and preacher. This time, because Rosemary and Sally thought that my getting started on the Ballou sermon the 1st of August was too high a hill to climb, I am sharing my spiritual journey in newspaper publishing. They are right. It was much easier to prepare for this. This will be a religious as well as autobiographical presentation. I find if I am paying attention to myself and the community of which I am a part, I am regularly tripping over my needs to be true to 6 of our 7 Unitarian Universalist principles, missing only the congregational specific 3rd principle of acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Other than that, if I am doing my job as publisher and editor of the LeConner Weekly News, I am aware of 1st, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, 2nd, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, 4th, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, 5th, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, 6th, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and 7th, respect for the interdependent web of life of all existence of which we are a part. It is not every week that any of these principles make it into the newspaper, but over the course of the year, they all appear, sometimes several tangled up together. Seek and you shall find. In a more relaxed vein, I have long found that creedless as we are as a faith movement, if there is one agreed upon theology, it is that we are each on a spiritual journey. Thank you for allowing me to share mine this morning. I hope many here will have the courage and time to share your reflections of your spiritual journeys with us. It has been a lot of fun for me and has had great meaning from beginning to end. And I also want to say welcome to family and friends who tuned in this morning. My family may or may not remember, but when I got married about 26 years ago at the wedding, "'Tis a Gift to Be Simple" was part of the service. It's long been important to me in my life. And life is the greatest gift of all. A hymn I first heard in Cincinnati was also played at that wedding. And we're going to end with "Though I Speak with Bravest Fire," which was a favorite of the Toledo congregation, and they sang that several times over the course of the year. I will not be able to say enough about me this morning. If Socrates said an unexamined life is not worth living, well, I long ago examined mine. I appreciate Rosemary and Sally reading from the first page of Walden. One of my first adult heroes was Henry Thoreau. I do disagree with his cutting remark, which he wrote later in Walden, that, quote, "I am sure that I have never read any memorable news in a newspaper," unquote. But like him today, I will remember that it is, after all, always the first person that is speaking. In this sermon, as Thoreau wrote on page 1, in most books, the I, or first person, is omitted. In this, it will be retained. That, in respect to egotism, is the main difference. This is my story, and like Thoreau, I am using the I here, for it is I who know myself and this story best. I have been journeying to become myself since early adulthood. I hope I am still evolving, but the essential Ken Stern is distilled, not changed. Ralph Waldo Emerson famously wrote, "A foolish consistency is a hobgoblin of small minds." The key word there, of course, is foolish. That I have strove not to be. What I found I was, and I have maintained this position for decades, is a social critic. It is who I am. That is why I so readily gravitate to Thoreau. Thoreau hugged trees and paddled across Walden Pond, but he delighted in needling his neighbors. So while he wrote, "For my part, I could easily do without the post office," I think that there are very few communications made through it. I will bet you dollars to donuts that he hung out there to observe at least and to pick up news from his neighbors. He was a scold, skewering the locals and the government and leaders in their inevitable failings. Thoreau is smart and he was critical, and I'm a sucker for both. Thus, I voted for Ralph Nader three times. Like Thoreau, Nader is a prophet, one of biblical proportions. Of course, he is ignored in his own time. Me, alas, I am still a small person with way too much ego. So I readily confess I like my own words way too much. I am humble, but the words that fly from my brain to my fingers and onto the page, I mean this sincerely. I do not know where they come from. Whatever skill, talent, and experience I have, the words I write are a gift to me passed into the world. I cannot explain the miracle that has them appear. I've never asked Kathy about her singing talent, or Sally or Matt or Greg about their musical abilities, or Emily about her gift for patient care, or Doris, her support of children. From whence do our gifts arrive? And how rare or common is that we align with them and use them to their fullest? The New Testament Gospel of John starts with, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." That is about as Unitarian as the Bible can be. Well, I was not brought up either Unitarian or biblical, but words I did learn. Let me give you my background, the early influences in realizing the world around me as I grew up. My dad was a journalist, but more, in the 1960s, he subscribed to the Saturday Review, Norman Cousins' weekly magazine, a more intellectual-styled New Yorker, also with cartoons, one-page columns, and incisive editorials, though I did not know what incisive meant back then. Because he worked for the United Auto Workers, the UAW, every month he got in the mail this little magazine titled Ammunition. It was postcard size, about 4 inches by 6 inches, and probably written on eighth grade level, which is when I probably started reading it. It was really an amazing little magazine, and the title was perhaps not subtle, but it went to every UAW worker in the country, and there were hundreds of thousands back in the 1960s. So the Ammunition came in the mail. It had New Yorker-like cartoons. As an eighth grader, I understood cartoons, though not adult cartoons. That's what I was being introduced to. And the cartoons would have workers as heroes and the bosses as villains. The little magazine had pithy quotes and easy-to-understand graphs of things that were good or bad for union members and their families. The local in Toledo that made Jeeps was so big they had a weekly newspaper. For 20-plus years, my dad was its editor. I remember the first floor hallway in his office building. There was a wall of prints depicting labor struggles. The one I clearly recall was called The Strike. It was an 1840 setting with a group of workers at the front door of the owner's house or maybe the company office. The owner was at the door. The labor leader was calling the owner out with a list of grievances. So I clearly grew up knowing the answer to the labor song's question, which side are you on? That was my formative year environment. Let me give you my unscientific, romantic analysis of a part of genetics. At First Unitarian Church in Cincinnati, we had a monthly reading group, and around 2015 read, She's Not There, A Life in Two Genders by Jennifer Finney Boylan. Boylan wrote that she knew she was a girl since she was three. It was her essence, and she was trapped in a boy's body. I read that, and my revelation was that some people have a gene for justice, and they are stuck. That is who they are. It is not good or bad. It just is. So Martin Luther King Jr. was just being himself. He had to preach and fight for justice. It is just part of what some people are. I, too, am stuck in a similar way with being myself. I struggled to praise the nuns after church last week, the nuns who march and chant, if you want peace, work for justice. I am drawn to democracy like a moth to the flame. Volunteering to campaign to boycott grapes for California farm workers Saturday at a grocery store when I was 16, and volunteering in the McGovern for President campaign at 17. I worked for years on election campaigns. Almost every year, there would be what I call democratic savants. An idiot savant can do strange and amazing math computations. Some people came to election campaigns and were a bit odd, not the smartest or the most together, but they wanted to be part of democracy, of the foundation of people joined together in society, moths to the flame, and emotional attachment to making a better world. Nothing is more democratic than the press. Newspapers are the only industry written into the Constitution, the First Amendment reading, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, there are 1,000 reasons people run newspapers. Some want to support their community. Some want to support theater or get free tickets to sporting events. Some like to chase fire engines. Some are really good at making money. Historically, newspapers were the Microsoft and Google of their days. And some have this crazy notion of speaking truth to power, of, as an editor wrote around 1900, of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. I realize I am a writer and not a reporter. I like the way words sound and flow. I want to say something useful and stitch the community together. Chasing fire engines or reporting town council is not as important to me in and of itself. The Laconia Weekly News does not have a mission statement, but if it did, it'd be along the lines of holding a mirror up to the community so it can reflect on what it is, where it is, and where it wants to go while championing a saner, sustainable future. Where and when did I start writing? I wrote my first letter to the editor of the Toledo Blade after the McGovern campaign in November of 1972. I hope I still have that letter in a box somewhere. Here is the first sentence. Dear editor, I am 17 and cannot yet vote. I extolled McGovern for promoting socialized medicine and probably for being against the Vietnam War. I had to start out in a personal voice in the first person identifying myself. In college, my first roommate volunteered for the college newspaper, and thus I did too. I went on to minor in journalism and shared editorship in my last quarter, the spring of 1980. The first May issue I dedicated to Alison Krauss, Jeffrey Miller, William Schroeder, and Sandra Scherer, the four students murdered at Kent State in 1970, 10 years earlier. And then I wrote an editorial in honor and remembrance of them, but hopefully I was also standing up against the state and its wars. I hope I have that issue in a box somewhere. For the next 35 years, I wrote occasional letters and guest columns in newspapers. Twice in graduate school, I wrote for the school newspaper, editorial columns once, and book reviews the second time. I freelanced a bit in Minneapolis, covering Ralph Nader in the 2000 election when he came through, and I wrote book reviews for the Sunday St. Paul Pioneer Press. In 2015 in Cincinnati, I traded theater reviews for tickets in a region with a strong theater scene. Then, in August 2016, my friend Dick Wittenberg called me on a Friday afternoon. The rest, as the cliche goes, is history. The most wondrous part of my journey is indirectly about writing, but directly about 40 plus years of friendship. It is about being true and sharing ourselves in good time and bad. Spiritual journeys are not always about skipping under rainbows. And in the summer of 2016, I was in a bad place mentally and emotionally. I was managing a small nonprofit that was a startup in Cincinnati, and it was about to run out of funding, and my job would end. I had shrunk my social footprint and self-isolated. I knew my next job would be tending bar or making coffee drinks. I was 61 and too young and not rich enough to retire. I was stuck. I was not a happy camper. Then Dick calls and asks if I had seen the story in the New York Times about this fellow up in Vermont who couldn't sell his newspaper and was giving it away in an essay contest. It cost $175 to enter a 400-word essay. A panel of judges would pick the winner, and the owner would get a pot of money for his retirement. Dick tells me this, and then he ends with, "I bet you can win that newspaper." That is love and hope and belief in another human being. I had never had a wage job in newspapers, but had been writing for over 35 years, sometimes for Dick. Dick was my closest friend, and he knew exactly where I was in Cincinnati. I was nowhere, and that I was stuck, and was hopeless. And he said, in genuine good faith, "I bet you can win that newspaper." Newspapers around the country have been laying off reporters and closing, and lots of journalists with 20 years of experience were never going to retire. And my friend thinks I can beat them all in an essay contest and gain the prize of a weekly newspaper up in Vermont. Well, why not? I was in a bad place mentally, but this is also true. I know myself and I believe in myself. And this late in life, I remain an incurable romantic. Dragons to slay, let's go after them. So I wrote an essay, sent it off to friends and family, and I remember I sent it to VJ, my brother-in-law, asking for ideas to make it stronger. After about a week, I made edits, I wrote a check, and I mailed it off. The next day, a friend emailed me suggesting I shape the essay as a newspaper story with a headline. That was brilliant. Creativity was the contest criteria. So I rewrote the essay as the welcoming editorial from the new publisher introducing himself to the community, wrote another $175 checks, and sent my hope off. This quest was giving me a lot of pleasure, brightening my day. I was in a small covenant group at church, and we were meeting either weekly or biweekly. This gave me something positive to share, this dream of an easy way out of my stuckness. 2 weeks later, I woke up at 2 a.m. with the idea for a third entry, this time 15 years in the future, as my last editorial before handing the paper over to new owners, a co-op combined of staff and subscribers. I made that up. The next day, I typed it out, wrote a check, and sent it off. Now I'm in $525, and I'm the happiest and most lighthearted I have been in some time. Why didn't I win? The owner set his rules for 700 entries, giving him a $120,000 retirement pot. Alas, only 142 essays came in and the contest collapsed. But I am dreaming, so I do what we all do. I open Google on my laptop and type weekly newspaper for sale. Right, the shortest search phrase capturing my goal. I got 65 hits. So now it became a Goldilocks story. You know, too hot, too cold, just right. Too hard, too soft, just right. Too big, too small, just right. Of my 65 hits, a weekly in Northwest Washington with a print run of 1,500 copies seemed the right scale and doable. It was being sold by a broker, and the announcement was generally phrased and anonymous without the paper's name or location. So I called the phone number to get details. That's the first half of a long and fun story, and the most amazing aspect of it is not the writing faux editorials giving me joy while I was in a dark place, but that my friend Dick's love for and belief in me shone through 40 years. He did not see an old, ugly duckling. No, he saw a white knight in shining armor. He is more romantic about me than I am. So I called the phone number and spoke with the broker. He sent a non-disclosure agreement. I signed it and sent it back. He sent me a 30-page prospectus. I told him I didn't care how good the newspaper was. If I did not think I would fit in with the community, I would not buy it. I had rejected a couple of other prospects in deep red rural areas of Ohio and Oregon. And he said, like a typical real estate agent, something like, "LeConnor is the cutest town. You are going to love it." Me, I thought he was just talking. I never looked. I never did any research into LeConnor. I'm just thinking, can I buy myself a job and keep paying into Social Security and aim for retiring at 70? I was very job security focused. I also told him I was getting my knee replaced 2 days before Thanksgiving and could not come out until February or March of 2017, and that I would call him at the first of the year. And I did. My first question, is the newspaper still for sale? Maybe someone bought it as a Christmas present. In response, they told me the thing all Americans want to hear. "I talked to the girls," he said, referring to Sandy and Cindy, the owners. "I suggested they drop the price $50,000. They agreed." Wow, now I'm even more interested. Like everyone else, I like a good deal. So I flew out the first Thursday in March and had a 3-hour lunch at a Seattle airport hotel with Dave. I drove my rental car north about 6:30 p.m. and got stuck in rush hour traffic. It rained the whole way. It was rainy or overcast and never above 35 degrees the entire time I was there. There was snow on Mount Airy. Most of my time in LeConnor, I was focused on, could this be my professional future and could I make it work? Then Saturday afternoon, I came over the Rainbow Bridge from the island and looked north over the downtown. And for the first time since coming out, I looked past the price of the paper, the possibility of selling ads, whether it could be a profitable venture. And in the late, overcast, cold afternoon, I saw the town and thought, maybe I could find peace here. Maybe I could settle here and be stable. It wasn't about money and surviving financially. It was about saving my soul. That Tuesday, I flew back to Cincinnati and called Dave and told him I would buy the weekly news at their asking price. I sold my house, trading that for a weekly newspaper in McConnor, and in June, drove across country. So 4 years later, I am perfectly at peace. I was at peace and fit in from the beginning. The first year went by like 2 days. The second year went by like 2 weeks, pretty fast. Then I hit a wall at the start of the third year. I had worn myself out. A year later, I am still a bit worn out. But I am completely at home professionally. I like every part of newspaper publishing and am good at most of it. I love advocating for a new library building and writing them checks. I enjoy assigning stories and editing them when they come in. I am a competent photographer who snaps without hesitation. I am the best person to go out and sell ads and explain the advantages of the weekly news to merchants. When I can, I champion school teachers and students and town people. When I can, I question school boards and town councils. Writing editorials is my favorite part, of course. It is a role I take very seriously. Each week when I write an editorial, my goal is to write the truest, most right thing I know about the topic. I pick something current and critical, whether it's school board or presidential actions or inactions. An editorial to me is a chance to speak truth to power, to stand in the pulpit and share with the community my thoughts and analysis on the rights and wrongs of what I observe before me in the world. I take my editorial as seriously as any minister in her study working away on her sermon. I am thrilled that I am ending my work life with a great success. I do not have to prove a thing. I do not have to publish one more issue. Not to be immodest, but the LeConnor Weekly News is a very good newspaper. I bought the LeConnor Weekly News in June 2017, knowing full well that I was entering a 20th century business almost 20 years into the 21st century. Indeed, newspapers are as much 19th century as 21st century. Yet, they still stitch together a community. People come into the office to renew subscriptions and place classifieds for yard sales, free sofas, and lost pets. They come in with news tips, obituaries, and letters to the editor. They certainly complain and criticize. The first year or so, over 25 canceled their subscriptions. For a while, I called people up, asking if they wanted to write a letter and asking them to stay engaged with the community, that it was an 8-page paper and my editorial was only on part of one page, which they could skip. I learned to say, I have a strong editorial voice. Every once in a while, someone will say thank you and compliment an editorial. My August 18th editorial criticizing town council for making the LeConnor Library pay a parking fee instead of deferring that cost for 7 years brought me more responses than any other I have written this year. As I said earlier, my gift of writing humbles me. Whatever skill and talent and experience I have, I do not know where the words come from. Those words flow from my brain through my fingers and onto the page, and I write till I am done and am amazed at how much sense my sentences make. But where do those words come from? But I know where my ethics and my theology are supported in my religious faith. Of the 6 Unitarian Universalist principles, most on my mind in my work are the 2 we like best. The first, the inherent dignity and worth of every being. I changed that last word from person. And our 7th, the respect for the interdependent web of life of which we are all a part. What I choose to cover, how I approach issues, and what I emphasize in stories, photos, and editorials are all editor choices, which means my ethics and theology challenge me to present the highest truth I can with every decision I make. And that is what I try to do. I am a lucky guy to get to be myself every day.